Wednesday, July 15th, 2020. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, coming to you from the Mile High City here in Denver, Colorado, and we are back for another week of talking sports with a dose of common sense. Hey, happy Wednesday to you. I hope that your week is off to a strong start. I hope that you and your family and everyone in your life right now is doing well. Hopefully everyone is staying healthy, both physically and mentally, through everything that is going on in the world right now. We are happy to have you here with us today. And you know, we do have a birthday in the sports world that I kind of wanted to mention today. Kind of wanted to wish a happy birthday today. And he's no longer with us, but former NFL player, the late Alex Karras, he was actually born on July 15th back in 1935. Now, you might hear the name Alex Karras and think, like, who cares, right? But I'm telling you, Alex Karras is a really, really interesting guy. Like, you want a 30 for 30 subject? This is a guy whose story had a number of twists and a number of turns. Get this. Alex Karras grew up in Indiana. He would end up attending the University of Iowa. Okay. He was an offensive lineman. But Karras had some beef with his head coach. He actually quit the team a few times, and he even threw a shoe at his coach, which of course didn't go over so well, but he kind of got things together his junior year, and he was actually named an All-American. Now, by his senior season of college, he was the most dominant defensive lineman in the country. He won the Outland Trophy, and get this, a defensive lineman, Alex Karras from the University of Iowa, he was the runner-up for the Heisman Award. Following college, he said no to the Canadian Football League, who at the time was trying to lure some of the top college players to their league. And instead of getting ready for like the draft or getting ready for the upcoming NFL career that he would have, he instead did some pro wrestling.
What?
That's just kind of how he was. He would eventually be drafted by the Detroit Lions in 1958, and he quickly became one of the top defensive linemen in the entire NFL. Here's where it gets a little bit crazier. Karras got into some trouble. See, on January 7th, 1963, Karras's ownership in a Detroit bar became a source of controversy because league officials were telling him he needed to sell his interests in the place because they were hearing that there was gambling and organized crime going on in this bar. So Karras threatens to retire. He says, I'm not going to give up the bar. I'll just retire. Forget the NFL. I'm not going to do this. Finally, he went ahead and admitted he was placing bets on NFL games. Alex Karras was suspended by the NFL along with Green Bay Packers running back Paul Herning for one season. That was in 1963. And of course, during his suspension, Karras wasn't normal yet again. Karras went back to doing the kind of things he did. He went back to pro wrestling. And in fact, he took on memorable characters like Dick the Bruiser.
So we're just done with phrasing, right? That's not a thing anymore.
For one, that's a horrible nickname. Let's just get that out of the way real quick. But instead of just saying, okay, I'll sit out my time. No, Karras goes and is doing pro wrestling. That's just how this guy rolled. He was eventually reinstated to the NFL, along with Horning, in March of 1964 by NFL Commissioner Pete Rozelle. And upon returning to action in 64, Karras kind of had a chip on his shoulder. In fact, prior to a Detroit Lions game, when an official asked him to call the pregame toss, Alex Karras said, I'm sorry, sir, I'm not permitted to gamble. Yeah, not like he was holding a grudge or anything. He was just a goofy guy. During the 1967 preseason, he jokingly commented that he would walk back from Denver if the new AFL Denver Broncos would somehow beat his mighty Lions. Of course, the Broncos actually won, and Karras backtracked, and he flew home on the team plane. Karras would play 12 NFL seasons, and his 161 games played are the 15th most in Detroit Lions history. In fact, Alex Karras missed just one game in his entire career due to injury. Playing defensive line? That's insane. He made the Pro Bowl four times And while he's not a member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame, the Hall of Fame did name him a member of the 60s All-Decade Team. Alex Karras was a really, really good player. Then, after his career, he wasn't done. He stayed busy. He picked up a bit part on the Mary Tyler Moore Show. He played a minor but memorable role of Mongo in the Western parody Blazing Saddles.
Hey, you can't park that animal over there. It's illegal.
And in 1974, Alex Karras was actually brought in by ABC to replace Fred Williamson as a commentator for Monday Night Football. He actually served in that booth for 3 seasons, and then he went back to acting. He played the sheriff in Porky's. He was a Western settler in Centennial. And of course, in the 1980s, Alex Karras would land his most memorable role. That's right, folks. Alex Karras was in a TV sitcom playing George Papadopoulos, Webster's adoptive father.
Hey, I'm a kid. How would I know what I need?
And in fact, his real-life wife, Susan Clark, actually played his wife on the show as well. Alex Karras passed away in 2012 at the age of 77. But Alex Karras, born today on July 15th. No, that guy led a pretty amazing, pretty incredible, pretty eventful life. Hey, if you'd like to contact the show, maybe tell us, I don't know, your favorite cheesy sitcom character of all time.
Goodbye, Webster.
We would love to hear from you. Hit us up on email, dailydosports@gmail.com, or go find us over on Facebook or Twitter. Both of those handles are at Daily Dose Sports. If you need to reach out, maybe you just want to talk to someone, maybe you want to talk some sports, maybe you're wondering how this whole restart of sports is going to get going. Hey, a lot of people need someone to talk to right now. Feel free to reach out to us. Maybe you have a suggestion for the show. Maybe you have a question. Whatever it might be, reach out to us. We would love to hear from you. Also, remember, we do place a video portion of the podcast over on YouTube. Make sure you go over to YouTube and check that out over there. Hey, and as long as you're doing some online shopping, which we know, we all are, I have seen the mail trucks, okay? They are packed with things from like Amazon. Hey, if you're going to be doing that shopping anyways, you might as well go over to tpublic.com and order some Daily Dose gear. We've got a lot of gear over there. All you do is go over to tpublic.com, search Daily Dose, scroll down until you see our logo and click on it. You're going to find a number of items over there. We've got t-shirts. We've got sweatshirts. We've got hoodies. The cool part is you can order them in whatever color that you want. We've got a couple of different styles over there. We've got social distancing masks that, by the way, are super comfortable. But we've also got laptop covers. We've got cell phone covers. A number of items over at tpublic.com. They're doing a ton of sales right now because they know so many people are shopping remotely like that. Make sure you stop by tpublic and get some Daily Dose gear. Hey, today on the show, we have something, again, a little bit different for you. We are going to finish up a conversation that we started last week. We were joined by a friend of the show, and we were discussing some of the biggest what-ifs in sports history. We've got a few more to get to that we ran out of time last week. We're going to get to those in just a few minutes, but we do have a few items in the world of sports news that we need to get to first. So let's go ahead and jump in right now. You know, as the NFL plans for how to play through the whole pandemic situation, the league actually distributed new game day protocols to teams last week, which included a prohibition on any players exchanging jerseys after games, as well as a ban on any post-game interaction of any kind that takes place within 6 feet of each other. Now, I have told you before that sometimes we have old guys in boardrooms, like they're having this meeting, and they come up with these ideas that probably in this boardroom full of old people that are completely separate from, you know, reality, they probably got a few bravos, maybe a couple of huzzas. That's a great idea in the meeting. But the actual point that they brought up was really, really stupid in real life. So here is what they said. You can't exchange jerseys after the game. You can't have, you know, kind of that interaction after the game within 6 feet of each other. Let me see if I have this straight. It's okay to play a full collision sport, not a contact sport. I'm not talking about just contact. I'm talking about collision sport for 60 full minutes. You can hit your opponent. You can scratch them. You can punch them. You can tackle them. Whatever. But after the game, you can't talk within 6 feet of each other or exchange jerseys, because that's when it's really going to get dangerous. That's where we draw the line. Hey, we're not going to have any sort of transmission of any sort of virus from that interaction after the game. We're going to make sure we stop it right there. This is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. And you're already hearing NFL players pushing back on it, but it just makes no sense. It sounded great in the boardroom, I'm sure. It probably got a few, hey, great idea. But this is dumb. This is, I don't know, like having a no holding hands policy for hookers on their way back from the motel. What difference does it make after all you've been through, after all you've done? I don't care if you hold hands now or not. The damage has already been done. Trust me on that. The Washington Redskins did officially announce on Monday that they will be changing that team nickname, although no new name has been announced just yet. Owner Daniel Snyder, he had for years been resisting any consideration to change the name. In fact, he told USA Today back in 2013, put it in all caps. He would never change the name. Now, some who have worked for Snyder said that they believe he would rather sell the team than use a new name. And while we don't know what the next name will be, they say it's in like litigation as far as a trademark and that kind of thing. Snyder now says he is excited about the new changes. Of course, Snyder and the franchise have been under all that pressure to change the nickname after the protests against social injustice began back in May following the death of George Floyd in Minnesota. And within a few weeks after Floyd's death, multiple sources said that Snyder had been discussing the name change for several weeks with the league. But let's be honest, this name change has nothing whatsoever to do with George Floyd or any type of social justice. This has to do with the fact that during that time, a letter signed by 87 investors and shareholders with a total worth of $620 billion was sent to sponsors FedEx, Pepsi, and Nike and asked them to stop doing business with the team unless they change the name. That's why it's being changed. And I mean, Nike specifically got really, really serious about Washington changing this name. And we know the money that Nike has. So when Nike speaks, like, you've got to listen, right? But they say that Nike was getting ready to pull down signs and murals from the stadium if the name was not changed. And you know, those signs were handmade by children under the age of 10 working for slave wages. So if Nike is willing to pull down those signs and waste all that labor, hey, you know it was getting serious. Meanwhile, NBA players are down in Orlando and they are preparing for the restart of their season in just a few weeks. And NBA Commissioner Adam Silver has approved players to wear social justice messages on the back of their jerseys instead of putting their names on there. Now, so far, 285 of the expected 350 eligible NBA players had, in fact, picked a social justice message to put on their jerseys. Only 17 had opted to continue to just put their name on their jerseys, at least right now. The list of the suggested messages that were agreed on by the NBA Players Association and the NBA and then made available to players per the source are things like, you know, Black Lives Matter or vote or I can't breathe, justice, peace, equality. There are a number of other messages that players can put on their jerseys. But we've already heard that one superstar will surprisingly be keeping his own name on his jersey. And that is Los Angeles Lakers star LeBron James. On a video call with NBA reporters last week, LeBron had this to say. Hey, I commend anyone that decides to put something on the back of their jersey. It's just something that didn't really seriously resonate with my mission, with my goal. I don't need something on the back of my jersey for people to understand my mission or know what I'm about and what I'm here to do. Hey, you don't have to put anything on the back of your jersey. And I'm totally okay with that. If you want to put something on there and the league's okay with it, I do worry a little bit when these leagues get too entangled into politics, because I think for the most part, people go to watch sports to get away from the politics. So be very, very careful. But if you want to put something on the back of your jersey that the NBA has approved, do whatever you want. And like I said, I was a little bit surprised that LeBron didn't do that. We know he's been out at the front of a lot of causes. I thought he'd put something on there. I thought, sure, he would probably put something like, I don't know, Free Hong Kong on the back of his jersey. And we have already had our first significant injury in the NBA down in Orlando. Los Angeles Lakers point guard Rajon Rondo suffered a fractured right thumb on Sunday that is going to need surgery. They say Rondo will miss 6 to 8 weeks. It is possible he could return toward the end of the playoffs if the Lakers were to make it that far. What I find interesting about this is that Rondo had already been complaining about his hotel room in the Orlando complex, saying it looked like a Motel 6. Now, I have seen pictures of the rooms at that Orlando complex. That's not a Motel 6, bro. You are that far from reality if you think it is. That's the bubble you have been living in, not this bubble. This is a different situation. But Rondo apparently wasn't happy with the complex down in Orlando, which does make you wonder, how did he break that thumb? I mean, did anyone see it? Did he sneak a hammer into the complex? Did he pull a Gardner Minshew? I mean, we have to ask these questions, don't we? Finally, let's get over to college football, where a day after the Big Ten announced it would play a conference-only schedule in all sports this fall, the Pac-12 has voted to do the same. Late last week, during a virtual meeting with athletic directors, university presidents, and conference officials. One of the reasons the Pac-12 has said that they decided to push back the start of their football season was a concern that UCLA and USC would not be ready to play in early September because of all the pandemic cases taking place in the Los Angeles area. Now, another reason the Pac-12 is also following the example of the Big Ten is because the Pac-12 is probably getting pretty sick of losing games to the Mountain West in their non-conference schedule every year. So, I mean, this helps out there too. Sick and tired of getting beat by a lower level league? Just cancel all those games. That'll work out much, much better. Now, they are saying that the ACC and the Big 12 are trying to wait until July to make a decision. And I think these schools have a unique advantage. Let's watch Major League Baseball. Let's watch the NBA. Let's watch some of these other sports and see what they do and see maybe where they struggle. Maybe then we can find a better course of action for how we're going to attack this whole thing. So some of these leagues are saying, we're just going to go with our conference schedule. We're going to eliminate those non-conference games because we all know the virus can't spread within the same conference, apparently. Meanwhile, you've got a school like Notre Dame going, so what's all this conference stuff that everyone keeps talking about?
What was all that one in a million talk?
Losing the Big Ten and the Pac-12, that's going to cost Notre Dame a little bit. You're going to lose games like Wisconsin and Stanford and USC. Oh, but if the ACC goes conference only, Notre Dame will literally be out of opponents. They won't have any games. They won't have to play anyone. I mean, they'll have a schedule like Clemson in the ACC. They'll be playing a schedule like the New England Patriots for years in the AFC East, or like LeBron James in the Eastern Conference of the NBA. What I'm saying is Notre Dame won't have to play anyone. It's going to be very, very interesting to keep an eye on exactly what happens as college football is trying to come up with a plan. Okay, coming back, with the sports world being mostly quiet right now, we need to finish up our conversation with a longtime friend of the show that we started last week. We were actually taking a look back at some sports history, and we were wondering what could have happened if things had changed just a little bit. We are going to continue our conversation looking at some of the biggest what-ifs in the world of sports when we get back. So last week on The Dose, we were joined by longtime friend of the show, Mike in Castle Rock, to take a look back at some sports history and wonder, what if this sports story had gone in a different direction? Like, what if Ted Williams doesn't have to go serve in two wars? What if Bill Buckner doesn't make that error in the 1986 World Series? What if the Portland Trailblazers selected Michael Jordan when he was still on the draft board back in 1984? A number of interesting questions. We had just discussed, what if the Baltimore Colts had refused to trade quarterback John Elway when they drafted him? Could he have really played baseball instead? In fact, we are still discussing John Elway. Let's jump back into that conversation right now. Let's stay with John Elway. Because let's say in 1983, we have the greatest quarterback draft class in history. You had six quarterbacks taken in the first round alone, which sounds insane, but four quarterbacks from this class went on to lead their teams two Super Bowls. In fact, 11 of the next 16 years after this draft, the AFC was represented in the Super Bowl by a team led by one of the quarterbacks in the 83 draft, which is completely insane. Makes no sense. But the top pick of the draft, like you said, was owned by the Baltimore Colts. What if the Colts had heeded the advice and said, we're not going to even draft Elway. We're going to go with someone else. We're going to pick the next guy. Who did the Colts pick?
Well, at the time, who went two?
Okay, so here's what we had. We had Colts take Elway. At two, the Rams take Eric Dickerson. At three, the Seahawks take Kurt Warner, the running back, not the quarterback. The Broncos took Chris Hinton, the lineman. The Chargers took Billy Ray Smith. The Bears took Jim Cover. And the next quarterback selected at the time, the Chiefs take Penn State quarterback Todd Blackledge.
Wow.
Yeah. Who doesn't want to do over and all of that? Ooh. By the way, holy cow. Meanwhile, Dan Marino's out there like, seriously? What do I got to do here? What if the Colts take Marino? What if they take Blackledge? How different is everyone's? I mean, what do the Broncos do?
Well, the Broncos are obviously the most affected by that. The
sure.
Colts, maybe not so much because they just lost a Pro Bowl offensive lineman.
Yes. And Chris Hinton was a very good offensive lineman, but at the end of the day, he was an offensive lineman.
Right.
He was not a franchise changer by any stretch. Yeah, the Colts would get the big change because even if they went and got Blackledge or Tony Eason or Ken O'Brien or anyone else, the Colts would have improved dramatically, let alone had they went and got that Marino guy. Because how different would the Colts look?
He was an okay guy.
I heard he was good. I heard he had like a quick release or something. I don't know. Meanwhile, Elway falls in the draft. How far does Elway fall? I'm saying the Rams take him at two. And he ends up in California instead of Dickerson. And then,
well, that's where he was from.
Right. And then how much does that change the Rams? They don't go to St. Louis if you have the hometown boy in blue and yellow. It changes everything again completely if the Colts aren't just stubborn and say, we're going to take him no matter what. And then they end up basically giving him to Denver. Denver gave them Chris Hinton and like Mark Herman for John Elway, which is absolutely insane. And I think they got a pick, which I'm sure they screwed up anyways. So that doesn't even matter. It changes the entire league for years and years and years if the Colts just hadn't been so stupid and so stubborn. We're going to take him no matter what. You say, okay, never mind, go play baseball. You stick with your guns and you say, we're going to make him stick it out. He goes and has success in baseball, which we both believe he would have. Or you say, forget it, we're going to go with a different guy, and the landscape of the NFL is completely, completely different because now who's falling? Who's dropping? Who's coming up? No, there's a lot of really, really crazy kind of butterfly effects that would have happened
very interesting.
In that 1983 NFL draft. Let's talk some more NFL because we like the NFL. And right now, Mike and I are like a crackhead looking for a hit waiting for the NFL. But you know, some teams, no matter the sport, maybe they lose a game and it seems like they can never get on the right side of the history because they lost that game. They lost that big game. And I want to talk about one specific team because in 1990, the Buffalo Bills had a dogfight in Super Bowl 25 against the New York Giants. And they lose when kicker Scott Norwood misses that 47-yard field goal with 8 seconds left in the game. And then we know Buffalo goes on to lose three more Super Bowls. And honestly, after that one, none of them were even close, right? They were all blowouts after that. But what if Scott Norwood, who, by the way, gets a bad rap, because a 47-yard field goal isn't a chippy. That's almost a 50-yarder. So I don't blame Norwood. What if he makes the kick? What if he hits it? And the Bills, not the Giants, are the Super Bowl champions. Does that totally change their trajectory of everything they've done since then? I would think it has to, doesn't it? Hey, we're the champs. We won.
Yeah, because every time, you know, every team that loses a Super Bowl, goes back and looks to see why they did it and tried to bolster up the deficiencies that they may have had.
Yes.
Through draft or free agency or what have you. It certainly would have broke. I think it was right in the middle of that, 13-year NFC streak?
Yeah.
It would have snapped that right in half. Yeah, that's interesting.
What if the Bills beat the Giants and then they go on to win two or three, maybe not four, but let's say they win a few Super Bowls and the AFC thing is broken. Elway and the Broncos don't break it in 98 or 97, I guess, season. It's completely different. The Bills, we look at the Bills now. What are the Bills are, I would say lovable losers, except for when they're not that lovable, but they're losers. If they just hit that kick, how different do we view the Buffalo Bills? Everyone looks at the Bills as kind of the never was, never could get. Hey, Jim Kelly was really, really good.
So was Thurman Thomas.
Thurman Thomas was amazing. So was Andre Reed.
Yep.
So was Bruce Smith and Cornelius Bennett.
Oh, yeah.
And Marv Levy probably doesn't get nearly enough credit for what he was doing in Buffalo.
Such good. They were really good
teams. They were so far ahead of their time. They were doing this spread, hurry up, fast paced stuff back in the late 80s.
From the K-Gun.
From the K-Gun. And nobody was doing that stuff, and everybody looked at it as a gimmick. No, Marv Levy was winning with that stuff. Marv Levy was a really underrated coach, but we look at him now. Yeah, no, he's good, but I mean, lost all those Super Bowls because he's kind of an idiot. No, he was a really good coach. How different would the narrative be about the Buffalo Bills if Scott Norwood just makes that kick? You and I were watching that game together.
Yeah.
At your apartment. That was a long time ago. Mike, you and me have been hanging out for a long, long time. Holy cow, that was a long time ago. Yes, Buffalo Bills could have changed everything completely. Mike, what else do you have in the NFL for us?
This is a pretty easy one. I'm sure it's probably on your list as well. What if Bo Jackson doesn't blow out his hip?
The next one on my list. Yeah, because in 1987, the Los Angeles Raiders, they take a chance and they draft Auburn running back Bo Jackson, hoping maybe he'll play a little with us when he's not playing Major League Baseball, which he was really, really good at because he was excelling with the Kansas City Royals. Bo played 38 games over just four seasons, honestly. And maybe it was because we were in Denver. Mike Harden, Broncos safety, he still has Bo's cleat marks in his chest.
So he walks with a cane now.
Harden does?
Harden walks with a cane now.
Does he blame Bo Jackson?
He names his cane Bo. I'm not kidding. His cane is named Bo. I am not kidding.
It's a great story. Didn't know we were going to get that today.
You don't say this very often in the pros, but he looked like a man amongst boys.
I know. We haven't seen that combination of power and speed since Jim Brown. It made no sense. You can't be that big, because he was a big dude.
Yes.
What was he, 6'3 and 230? Run that fast. They say he ran a 4.3 40.
It made no sense. As an NFL fan like you, it saddens me that his career got short. But as a Bronco fan, there's a small portion of me that
terrorized us.
Well, he terrorized everybody.
Yeah.
I mean, so many plays, so many highlights for some reason were in the kingdom where he would just
running over Bosworth and running into the tunnel and running past. Like running past Seattle cornerbacks.
Yeah.
Running past a cornerback?
Yeah.
I get the linebacker. I get the defensive end. How are you running past a corner? That's how fast Bo was. And also, he would love to run you over too. Bo Jackson might be the greatest athlete I've ever seen in my life.
It's very possible. I mean,
he's in the conversation.
Just what he did and how well he did it. There's players that have played multiple sports and have excelled at them. But to be at the elite level in multiple sports.
Yeah.
Is unbelievable.
Okay, so here's a question. The Raiders have Bo. They get him in 87. In 88 and 89, the Los Angeles Raiders are being coached by a guy named Mike Shanahan. If Bo's healthy, again, how many dominoes fall? Is Mike Shanahan still the Raiders guy? And the Denver Broncos never see Mike Shanahan because Bo Jackson... Because remember, when he gets injured in 1990, they were actually pretty good. They ended up going to the playoffs and getting blown out by the Bills. But if you have Bo Jackson, that's not a 51-3 loss. That's who knows anybody's game. And I realize Shanahan had been fired by that point. But maybe you don't have Shanahan fired. Maybe Mike Shanahan never comes back to Denver. Bo Jackson changed a lot of things with that hip injury. And bizarrely, again, like we talked about with the Utah Jazz, maybe it changes the Denver Broncos more than it does anyone else. Because we get Mike Shanahan, who was the perfect coach for the perfect system with the perfect quarterback at the perfect time. Maybe he never comes back to Denver. A lot of bizarre what ifs.
Well, and Elway didn't win a Super Bowl until he had a stud running back.
Yes. And until he had Mike Shanahan running that zone offense.
Yep.
And Terrell Davis in the backfield.
Wow.
Could have drastically changed the landscape again of everything. That's why we do this. It's interesting to look at. Hey, we could go down the path of what if John Elway doesn't create the drive or the fumble and how much that affected a team like the Cleveland Browns. Because the Cleveland Browns, they're the dog. They didn't ever get it done. Bernie Kosar and whatever. That Cleveland team was really, really good. John Elway in 87, 80, end of 86, I guess, going, it was the 86 season. John Elway gets red hot on the drive. If he doesn't get hot on that drive, maybe Cleveland goes to the Super Bowl. Maybe Cleveland competes with the Giants better than Denver did. Or maybe Cleveland goes against Washington and they beat Doug Williams. I don't know. But Cleveland was a really, really good team. John Elway gets hot.
They may have had a more complete team than Denver.
Oh, Denver had, in the team picture, if you go back, and this is crazy, if you go on the Denver Broncos website, they have the team pictures from each year. In 86 through 90, it's just John Elway. Like, he's the only guy standing there by himself. they don't have, I don't think they had any other players. Because that guy is leading everyone else. But if Cleveland goes, that defense was really, really good.
Yep.
And you had Beiner, and you had Mack, and you had Slaughter, and you had Newsom, and you had Kosar. They were a more complete team than the Denver Broncos were. But John Elway just got hot.
Whether they win or not, they weren't the blowouts they were.
No, I think you're right. I don't think you have that friggin' 42-10 or whatever thing against Washington.
Yeah.
Because they had more talent. They definitely had more on both sides of the ball. The Cleveland Browns, but again, the whole what if thing. John Elway gets hot at the right time, right place, and somehow bizarrely steals that drive. And if you win that game, you have to think momentum might win you the next game. Because I'm convinced on some level, that's the only reason the Broncos beat them in the fumble game is because, well, we did this last year. We can do this again. Otherwise, I don't know if Denver wins that game. That's the fumble game. We could go down a whole path with that game because that's a bizarre finish to a game just in general. Without Ernest Beiner.
All the momentum.
Without Ernest Beiner, Cleveland isn't even in the game. Yes. Yes. They were rolling. The only thing I think that people forget, and here's the one thing I'll throw out there real quick because I won't stick on all Broncos all the time right now. If Ernest Beiner runs into the end zone, that just ties the game. That doesn't win the game. John Elway still has 2 minutes left.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not going to say if Ernest Beiner doesn't fumble, the Browns win the game because that's not the case. The Cleveland Browns should have taken care of business the year before, and then maybe they could have talked about the whole thing with Ernest Beiner. But I'll move past that. Okay, we're not going to go all John Elway all the time. But Mike, what else do you have in the NFL today?
What if the Detroit Lions didn't have such horrible management?
Oof. Well,
and Barry Sanders didn't say, you know, this is dumb. I'm out of here.
That's a great one. Well, Calvin Johnson too. There's another great one.
Yeah.
Barry Sanders might be the most exciting player in the history of the NFL. Gale Sayers, maybe someone like that. Barry Sanders might be the guy. And the Detroit Lions ruined him.
Yes.
Broke him. No, that's a great one because the Detroit Lions just couldn't and still can't get out of their own way ever. And they can't ever have nice things. They break them. They ruin them. Calvin Johnson, Barry Sanders, you ruined them both.
How many other teams would have done more with a very good quarterback like Matt Stafford?
Oh, yeah. Nothing. They've done nothing. They can't even get back to the playoffs. They're not even close to contending. If you ever want to look at ownership and how much it affects the product on the field, the Detroit Lions are a great example. Because they kind of, whatever. And as a result, you don't have that. No, we're going to win. We're going to win every single year. The Detroit Lions have never had that. And as a result, they've never had any success since like the Second World War. But what a waste, Barry Sanders.
Unbelievable.
Oh, he was so good. Have you ever seen a running back make a 4-yard gain look so insanely exciting in your life?
Well, it's because he ran 37 to get those 4 yards. And yeah, you're correct. I could watch Barry Sanders highlights for an hour.
They're so good.
Not get tired of them. They're amazing.
Remember in 94, they go get Scott Mitchell, who was going to save them. Scott Mitchell, that was going to be the guy. And they had Herman Moore. They had Barry. They had Brett Perryman. They had a little bit of talent, but they never had a defense. They never could put it all together at the same time. And Barry just labored in futility over and over and over again. I don't know that there's ever been a player as wasted as Barry Sanders.
Yeah, that's a very valid statement.
Because put him on any other team. Pick a team. Put him anywhere else. Put him on the Jets. I don't care. Barry Sanders would have probably won more games than he did in Detroit. Worst possible scenario for that poor guy to go to the Detroit Lions. They say when Oklahoma played Oklahoma State has Thurman Thomas starting. Oklahoma coach Barry Switzer at the time tells his team, whatever you do, don't hurt the starter because you don't want the guy behind him.
Wow.
Yeah. Just love that out there in Barry Sanders lore. Mike, I've got one here that you're probably going to have. Would surprise me if you don't. In 2001, starting New England Patriots quarterback Drew Bledsoe was hoping to get the Patriots back into the playoffs, but in week 2 against the New York Jets, he gets hit by Jets linebacker Mo Lewis. Now, when I say that he gets hit, it doesn't quite do it justice because Drew Bledsoe suffered a sheared blood vessel in his chest. Ugh, that's nothing good about that. In comes this skinny second-year backup out of the University of Michigan by the name of Tom Brady, if not for that injury to Bledsoe. Do we ever know who Tom Brady is? Does he ever get on the field? Is that ever a possibility? Do the Patriots ever win anything? Is Tom Brady considered the GOAT in anyone's imagination? I don't know.
I still hate Drew Bledsoe for not stepping out of bounds.
What a moronic play. Young quarterbacks, if you're ever wondering how you should treat that whole situation, remember NFL linebackers always catch you. Always catch you.
He took on that. I'm not going to linger on that. But yeah, that's a very interesting question. I don't know. You don't know if maybe in the back of his mind, Belichick knew what he had and was going to make the change after the season anyway. Belichick always seems to be ahead of the game. He lets guys go a year or two sooner than a lot of other teams will, and then he ends up looking like a genius for it. So we don't know. Would it have changed that year? Absolutely.
Sure, because they go on to win the Super Bowl against the Rams. Yeah.
Exactly. And a very good Super Bowl. That was the greatest show on turf, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yes. So it definitely would have changed that year, but beyond that, you don't know.
No. And you make a great point because we know Belichick, once we start paying you a certain amount and you have so many years in, he has no problem letting you go. He did it this year to the same guy. He let Tom Brady go. So we know he'll do that. But you even think back to other guys, the lawyer Malloys and those kind of guys. Hey, go ahead and go. I don't care. Yes, he probably cuts Drew Bledsoe loose eventually for this young kid that nobody knows. Does it delay the start? Does Brady get that first Super Bowl against the Rams? No, he probably doesn't. Because at the time, if you would have benched Drew Bledsoe for this young, everyone would have thought you were out of your mind. So that year wouldn't have happened.
Right.
But in the future, yeah, you make a good point. I think eventually Brady gets on the field because that's how Belichick does business.
Yep.
He eventually would get on. But it might have taken a little bit. With the time, everyone thought Drew Bledsoe, and I don't want to, this is going to sound bad when I say this. At the time, everyone thought Drew Bledsoe was really good.
True.
He was this big, strong guy. He looked great in a uniform. He just didn't always win that many games.
He was an average NFL quarterback.
Yeah.
Wasn't anything spectacular.
Here's the problem, because we're in Denver. And whenever he played Denver, he looked like an idiot.
Oh, he was, yeah.
He was terrible. We always dominated the Patriots. We have really good success against the Patriots, by the way. It's 2011. The Denver Broncos had just won a playoff game over the Pittsburgh Steelers with Tim Tebow at quarterback. Meanwhile, the Indianapolis Colts are going 2-14. They are looking to draft someone else because their longtime starter, Peyton Manning, has this neck injury that required multiple surgeries. Manning ends up becoming a free agent. He gets courted by multiple teams. He eventually signs with the Denver Broncos. The Colts go draft Andrew Luck out of Stanford. Now, Peyton with the Broncos eventually leads them to two Super Bowls. He wins one. But what if Peyton doesn't come to Denver? Remember the teams he was being courted by. The San Francisco 49ers, the Houston Texans, and the San Diego Chargers. Imagine how history is rewritten if Peyton signs with any of those guys.
Right.
If he goes to San Francisco, we don't know the name Colin Kaepernick. I'm sorry. We have no idea who that guy is. I don't know, he played in Nevada or something. I don't know. He never gets on the field because Peyton has that job. If he goes to Houston, well, he probably gets beat up a lot for one because they have a horrible success rate of protecting their quarterbacks. Maybe they don't end up with a Jadeveon Clowney because Peyton wins more games than what they were winning at the time. And if he goes to San Diego, the Chargers are still there because Peyton would have won games in San Diego instead of being garbage. Forget the Broncos. Peyton Manning changed the landscape of the NFL. Yeah, for sure. Because it's not just the guy that he signed with or the team that he signed with.
It's who he didn't.
Teams he didn't sign with. Plus, can you imagine, say Peyton goes to San Francisco. We never really got much in the way of Peyton versus Eli. We would have seen more of that if he's in the NFC, for sure. We know that.
That's right. It's a two-pronged effect based on his decision.
And the Chargers, one of the most snake bit franchises in the entire league. Imagine if they get Peyton Manning.
Mm.
And what do you do with Phillip Rivers? You have to do something.
They've had talent.
Yeah. Chargers have had talent for years. I mean, go back to 81, 82. Those teams are stacked. Go back to LaDainian Tomlinson. Those teams with Drew Brees. You had Drew Brees and LaDainian Tomlinson, and you'd never won anything ever. The Chargers, I always feel bad. This last year, we went out to San Diego for vacation. I'm there. I'm talking to this like Uber driver or whatever. And he's like, so where are you guys from? And I say, from Denver. And he goes, oh, you know, you're a Broncos fan. I go, yeah, you know, it's kind of rough right now. And he's like, rough? You don't know rough. Don't come to me with rough. Oh, you haven't won a Super Bowl in a few years? How rough that must be for you. I was like, no, you're right, dude. My bad. I got nothing. I have nothing to say to that. You're 100% correct.
Did he immediately instant message the other Chargers fan in town?
Yes, that other guy. And I asked him, I said, so like, what do you do? How do you still cheer for the Chargers or how, you know? And he goes, I do the best I can. Like I try to root for him. I try, but it's tough. It's really hard. Like I was like, no, I have no complaints whatsoever. I don't have anything to say whatsoever at all. We were talking about the New England Patriots earlier. Let's talk about a coach that faced the Patriots in a huge game in a very memorable situation, because back in 2014, Pete Carroll and the Seattle Seahawks faced the Patriots in Super Bowl 49. Mm. The Seahawks have the ball. It is 2nd and 1. Just outside the 1 yard line of the Patriots, 25 seconds left. They're down 28-24. And Pete Carroll, instead of giving the ball to Marshawn Lynch, opts for the quarterback, Russell Wilson, to throw the ball, which is fine, I guess, but throw the ball into the middle of the field, which of course gets intercepted. The Patriots win the game. Mike, what if Petey just ran the ball?
Well, it would have been back-to-back for Seattle, wouldn't it?
Well, the next year they beat Denver, so that would have been, yes.
Yeah.
So they win back-to-back titles.
That's another ring away from Brady, which I'm okay with. I just, the fallout from that, even the announcers were like, why are you making that call? I don't get that.
Such a weird call.
You've got, It was beast mode. That guy was unbelievable.
And he had just rumbled down like a 10-yard gain to get it down there.
And like you said, okay, throw it whatever. Okay, throw a fade. Throw something to the corner of the end zone where one guy has a shot at it.
Right, right.
That's not what they did at all.
Mm-mm.
They throw it right into the guts of the defense. It gets intercepted. Here's the weird thing, and this is going to sound kind of strange. Here's the weird part. Russell Wilson totally skates on this. Nobody is like, Russell, what are you doing throwing that ball? Everyone's like, Pete Carroll, you're a moron, which I get because Pete Carroll, you are a moron. But Russell Wilson, why did you throw that ball?
Yeah.
And you know what's weird? There is video of Bill Belichick in pregame practice or whatever that week telling Malcolm Butler, they like to run this quick slant down here. Jump this. When they throw this, jump this. Take a shot. Jump it because you're going to get the pick. Bill Belichick totally coached that play up. He already knew that play was coming. Just run the football. Hand off. You have Marshawn Lynch. You had time. You could have run it. Let's go back a little further. In 2006, Pete Carroll has the USC Trojans in the Rose Bowl against the Texas Longhorns. It's 4th-and-1. He has Lendell White run the ball up the gut. I have no problem with Lendell White. I've met Lendell White. He was on the radio show with me at times back when we used to do the Daily Dose on the radio. Lendell White's a good dude. Reggie Bush wasn't even on the field. What if he hands the ball to Reggie Bush? Pete Carroll has made some really, really weird decisions.
He's outsmarted himself a couple times.
Yes, and that's exactly what it is. He's outsmarted himself. Mike, I actually have two more here I'm going to throw. Mike, I want to go back further in NFL history, okay? Because back in 1968, the AFL sent the New York Jets to Super Bowl III to face the mighty NFL Baltimore Colts. And Jets quarterback Joe Namath, who was just sick and tired of hearing how they can't compete with the Colts, the Jets are garbage, the AFL is garbage, he delivers a victory and he delivers a 16-7 win. But the Colts started Earl Morrall at quarterback because Johnny Unitas had a bad arm. His arm was kind of sore. Earl Morrall was terrible in this game. He throws three picks. Johnny Unitas comes on late and actually scores a touchdown. What if the Colts had played Johnny Unitas and the Colts beat the Jets? Joe Namath is this huge blowhard that guaranteed a win and didn't do anything.
A goofball in a fur coat.
Yes. It could have at least changed that season. Now, I know the narrative is kind of that Joe Namath brought the respect to the AFL because the AFL was really, really good. Make no mistake about that. Those AFL teams were legit. They weren't garbage teams. Here's the funny thing about the whole thing. The Jets win the Super Bowl and everyone says they give the AFL legitimacy. The AFL is the real deal. Here's the funny part. Let's say Namath loses. Let's say the Jets lose. The next year, Len Dawson and the Chiefs beat the Vikings. So who cares? It's the same thing. It's just a year later.
Right.
But Len Dawson, you're suffering because you might have been the Joe Namath. You might have been, oh man, he's the stud. He's the guy. He's the guy that finally beat the NFL. Len Dawson pays for the sins of Joe Namath. He might have been like this stud everyone knows. Like if you went and asked the average person on the street, everyone knows Joe Namath. No one knows Len Dawson.
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah, you're right. He would have gotten more of the credit, but he wasn't as big of a out there in your face personality like that. So it wouldn't have been as dramatic.
And he wasn't New York.
Fact.
Because as we all know, just looking at Eli Manning, winning in New York is different than winning anywhere else. Because Eli Manning, good quarterback. Great quarterback? No, but he plays in New York.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, yeah, he's a great quarterback, and he won those two Super Bowls. So we're going to give him the great quarterback status. Mike, I've got one more before I get to my very final one, okay? Going to go back to 81. Tom Landry and the Dallas Cowboys are trying to get back to the Super Bowl again after they had lost the Super Bowl to the Steelers in 79. All they have to do is beat the dog meat team that were terrible. They were terrible all the time, but they finally had a bit of a team together. The surprising San Francisco 49ers had a good record, but I mean, come on. The Niners lose big games. That's just what they did at the time. Dallas was up 27-21 with 58 seconds left. Dallas, just close the deal. Finish it off. You're going to be the team. The Niners are driving. They're at the Dallas 6-yard line. They're facing a 3rd-and-3. And quarterback Joe Montana rolls right, throws the ball high and away, like, you know, Pete Carroll should have called for. And tight end Dwight Clark goes up and catches it in the back of the end zone for the catch. Hey, this game changed the scenery completely. Oh. Because San Francisco goes on to win three more titles in the 80s, and everybody copies Bill Walsh's West Coast offense. What if Joe Montana doesn't complete the catch with Dwight Clark?
Do they think Joe Montana's the guy?
Right.
What changes are made in the offseason? You know, don't know. That's, like you said, they went on to become the team of the 80s after that. So,
and everybody's copying Bill Walsh. If he doesn't come out with that catch, granted, you still had another play. It would have been fourth and three. Maybe Bill Walsh comes up with something. Maybe Montana comes up with something. But let's say they don't and the Cowboys win. Would the Cowboys have been like the team of the 80s? Like the Niners had been? Because they win 81, 84, 89. Maybe we're talking about Dallas racking up. Now we look at San Francisco like, you know, they are one of the winningest franchises in NFL history. Dallas would have been head and shoulders above everyone if they win some of those titles. Dallas has a ton of titles already. Might have changed things completely for two different teams. And think of that coaching tree from Bill Walsh, Mike Shanahan, Mike Holmgren. So many guys came from the Bill Walsh coaching tree. We know owners are smart in their right. But when it comes to football, most NFL owners just say, well, who's winning? Okay, well, go do what he does.
It's a copycat.
We're just going to copycat everything that works. So everyone said, okay, we got to get a West Coast guy because that's what Bill Walsh runs. So that's what we need to run. We need to go get a West Coast guy. So many guys got their jobs because of Bill Walsh, who was phenomenal. But if they don't make that catch, might have changed things completely and entirely throughout the NFL. Okay, Mike, I have one more left. And I want to thank you ahead of time for joining us here on this What If. We've had a lot of what ifs and a lot of dominoes falling and a lot of different scenarios, but I've got a big one for you to finish off with, okay? I'm going to lump two athletes kind of together because they're kind of in the same era. Even though they're two separate stories and they're two separate guys, it's kind of the same era. Back in 1936, yes, we're going way back. The Olympic Games were played in Berlin, where Adolf Hitler was looking to create the master race. And there was a young athlete that had, you know, participated at Ohio State by the name of Jesse Owens, who was debating whether or not he should even go to these games because he knew some of the nonsense that was going on over in Germany at the time. Well, he decides he's going to go against people telling him, don't go. Don't go. You shouldn't go. There's all kinds of craziness going on over in Germany. He goes. He wins four medals in the 36 Olympic Games in front of Hitler, by the way, beating his supposed master race in the biggest competitions, the speed and the long jump and, you know, the quick races. Jesse Owens proves that you don't have anything on me. You don't have anything on the rest of the world. You're not as great as you think. We're not done. Because also in 1936, American heavyweight champion Joe Louis is knocked out by German fighter Max Schmeling and loses his title. Schmeling, of course, goes back to Germany. He's a hero. His win was basically touted by Nazi officials as proof of their doctrine of Aryan superiority. Now, they say Joe Louis hadn't really trained all that well for that fight. He kind of took it easy. I've got it. I'm the heavyweight champ. I can beat Schmeling just by showing up. That wasn't the case. But in 1938, as things around the world, serious things, start to escalate, Joe Louis gets a rematch with Schmeling. And a few weeks before the fight, Louis actually visits the White House and President Franklin Delano Roosevelt tells Joe, we need muscles like yours to beat Germany. Meanwhile, Schmeling arrives in New York in June of 38 for the rematch, and he's actually accompanied by Nazi party publicists who issue statements that a black man cannot defeat Max Schmeling. And when Schmeling wins this fight, his prize money will be used to build tanks for Nazi Germany. Now, people today, or people in other eras, we think of Jordan, we think of Brady, we think of LeBron, whoever you want to put in there. They have pressure. Hey, Jordan, you got to win. Your reputation's on the... Imagine having not just your reputation, your country, your world, the entire planet basically resting on your shoulders. Hey, can you kind of knock this guy off that thinks he's... Joe Louis and
obviously Jesse Owens, they didn't just win. They won with this monumental, crazy amount of pressure on them. Mike, what if they hadn't won? Oh. Joe Louis knocks Max Schmeling out in 2 minutes and 4 seconds. And I'm telling you right now, if you go watch it on YouTube, it is one of the most brutal knockouts you will ever see. Joe Louis came across that ring and he beat the mess out of Max Schmeling for 2 minutes. To the point when I'm watching it, this happened in the 30s, and I'm like, you gotta stop the fight! You have to stop the fight! This is brutal! Stop the fight! Like, I'm yelling at the ref. What if these guys don't win? The mentality in World War II, I hate to say this, it's different though, isn't it? Because aren't we looking at that Aryan race as, well, maybe they are better than us. Jesse Owens couldn't beat him. Joe Louis couldn't beat him. Maybe they are a little better. And I'm not saying the world is all, I'm not saying the Nazis win. I'm not saying that. But my goodness, that's a lot on two guys. And more importantly, I think it changes. Don't get me wrong. Race relations in the United States, especially now, which is why I wanted to finish with this one. Things are all rosy. We know things are all great. But remember, after these two guys won, Joe Louis and Jesse Owens, they weren't just idolized and cheered for by black fans. White fans loved Joe Louis because he went and he beat the Nazis. They cheered for Jesse Owens because he went and he beat the Nazis. That was different. It might have changed, bizarrely, race relations had these two guys not won. And like I said, I'm not saying everything's fixed, but hey, we grew up cheering for black athletes. Some of that goes back to these two guys that did it before anyone. How different would the world be if those two studs didn't get it done? If Schmeling actually beats Louis again, because he had knocked him out in the first fight, You would have looked at it and been like, can we win this war? Should we get in this? Maybe these guys are better. Those two guys had a lot of what ifs on their stuff. Remember that the U.S. did declare themselves into the, you know, the World War in 41. So this was just after that. But the mentality changes completely, if not for those two guys going out and winning, because it just would have been different. It just would have felt different. Maybe they're better. Maybe we can't compete with these guys. Like I said, I won't put it all on them, but it would have been, again, rewriting history if Joe Louis or Jesse Owens don't get it done under the most insane pressure that I think athletes had to have ever felt, because everything's on you. They say Hitler called Schmeling before the fight. You've got to win this thing. Didn't get it done. And it wasn't even close. Mike, I want to thank you so much for stopping by, playing a little bit of What If, and honestly, we could do this all day. We could keep going.
Yes, that is true. I think we hit on some very good ones. You ended with a very good one as well. So always appreciate coming in. Thank you, Clint.
Well, anytime we get a chance to do that, you know, it's fun to do and it's fun to think about. You know, we've got a slow time right now with things not happening. Got to stay positive and hope that things are going to start, you know, picking up soon. Maybe we get some sports back soon. And hopefully, I hope we are having you back on to talk, you know, the NFL and talk what's going on. And maybe we're getting to play and maybe there's actually a couple people up in the stands or something. Have to hope for the best. But thank you so much for coming in and playing some What If, because we know sports are such a fine line between winning and losing, and just the slightest tweak, we could have the landscape change completely. But thank you so much for stopping by The Dose. We always enjoy your visits.
Thank you.
Hey, next week on The Dose, it is sounding like the NBA is going to return at the end of the month. But I mean, we have a number of questions about the NBA coming back, right? Well, next week, we are going to do our best to answer some of those questions and see if we can't figure out how this return to play is going to actually take place. Plus, you know we'll have some breaking sports news for you, and we just might have the return of the Daily Dose Top 5 after taking a few weeks off from that. So make sure that you tune in next week. Hey, don't forget to go over to YouTube and subscribe to our Daily Dose channel. Look for our Daily Dose logo. I will leave links for you everywhere so that you can get the correct one. Have to say thank you so much to Mike from Castle Rock for stopping by and talking some sports history with us. We always appreciate you coming into The Dose. And thank you to each and every one of you for listening to the Daily Dose each and every week. Thank you for the emails. Thank you for the texts. Thank you for the tweets. Thank you for subscribing to our YouTube channel and giving us positive ratings there. But most of all, thank you so much for sharing the show with someone that you know. We absolutely love it when you do that. Have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. Have a great week, everybody. I will see you all next Wednesday.
What was all that one in a million talk?